My name is Evan White, and you're listening to the Stories on Stage Davis podcast. The story you are about to hear, Alibi, is by Sam Sheeran, who is a founding editor of the Brooklyn-based Pink Monkey magazine and recently completed his MFA in creative writing at UC Davis. Reading Alibi is J.R. Yanker, who first performed for our series in 2016 and is the founder of Bike City Theater Company, a Davis-based nonprofit focused on presenting new and original works for theater. Stay tuned at the end of the episode to hear Sam Sheeran on the inspiration behind his story. But first, here's J.R. Yanker reading Alibi.
Alibi by Sam Sheeran. This was the summer I decided to live. It was Tuesday again. All week the news had been saying the city was too hot. Everyone was fainting. We actually saw one go in the park in the middle of a soccer match. But at night it wasn't so bad. Still, we were recovering, James and I on the beaten sidewalk outside Alibi, mumbling, smoking, spitting, leaning on one foot, the other, chewing on lives we couldn't swallow, feeling our pockets, angry, guilty, paranoid, listening, hungry, very hungry, and not yet drunk. We had come from across the street, another bar, an Irish bar. We had been talking about the news, another comedian had overdosed, there was a mass shooting in Toronto, or New Mexico, we couldn't remember. McRibs were back, half-watching a basketball game. It ended and the bar emptied. We crossed the street to Alibi. We smoked outside, talking over the game. There was a kid outside, too, maybe 18, wearing a t-shirt that said sweatshirt. He must have overheard us. He came up talking fast, hands on his temples, big pupils. He tried explaining how basketball really worked. He seemed terrified he wouldn't get it all out.
"It's like sewing," he said. You gotta weave, in and out, in and out."
He could be talking about anything, I thought.
"Really, the problem is I'm short," said the kid.
He was shaking his head. He stepped back, opening the floor for comments, questions.
"Are you okay?"
asked James.
"Don't pay him any mind," said a man, saving the kid for a moment.
The man had just stepped out of Alibi. He was middle-aged, sweating in a leather jacket, smoking a menthol. He looked like he might be from Albania.
"Listen," he said. "Listen, I've got a good story."
A buzz cut revealed his peninsular hairline. James and I watched Sweatshirt Kid. He was doing some repairs on a cigarette he kept dropping. But we were listening. We were always listening. It's what we did on our nights off.
"One summer," said the Albanian, pausing to swallow.
"We're listening,"
said James. I wanted to mess with the kid, just a bit, the loony. Maybe pinch his nipple or something, confuse him. I don't know why. I think everyone has urges.
"Remember, I was dead," said the Albanian. "I'd rolled myself a joint, turned on the TV. I was lying on the couch in boxers, sweating my balls off."
"Oh, yeah?"
said the kid, bending to pick up a cigarette again.
"When was this? I don't know. A few summers ago,"
said the Albanian.
"It was late after work. My wife is a nurse. She wasn't home. I took a whole joint to the face. You know, we're Colombian. She won't put up with that shit."
James and I stood shoulder to shoulder. James was sweating. I pulled on my cigarette and tried to stop thinking of all sorts of irrelevant shit. For whatever reason, James didn't have this problem. The world just was for him.
"Wake up to a scream,"
said the Colombian.
"It was loud, I mean really loud, and I'm stoned like what the hell. I leave my apartment, this is 4 blocks from here, I swear. You can see the park from the window. Anyway, I leave my apartment, and there's this goddamn man, and he's in the streets on fire. I'm thinking, holy shit, I'm shouting, what do I do? And he's shouting back, saying, who knows what, I'm raving. I mean, he was on fire, so I run back into the apartment and grab something, a salad bowl, poor guy, and fill it up."
"Goddamn," said James.
"I called the cops. I told them, someone's on fire outside, and I'm gonna try to put him out. They said, where are you, who's on fire? South side of Fort Greene Park, I told them, and I'll ask. Anyway, I put him out. Steam was coming off his skin. Steam, smoke, I don't know, and I was like, there goes his goddamn soul."
The Colombian stopped for a moment to pull on his cigarette before he continued.
"So the guy starts convulsing. Then he stops moving completely. I put my ear near his face and see if he's breathing. I was shouting in his face, but he didn't say anything. I started to shake him. I'm yelling, "Do not die." I'm shaking him and shaking him, but he wasn't moving, so I punched him in the face, which really woke him up. I told him, "No sleeping." He just shrieked, started yelling, "You're the devil, you fucking devil." His mouth all blistered. Then the squad car pulls up. "You can look this shit up," said the Colombian. "They put me in the post."
"We used to light fires behind our school," said James. And this was true. Me, James, whoever was around. "When we were kids," he said. "No people, though."
"I didn't do it," said the Colombian.
There was a long pause. I was starving. I don't know why we didn't eat more often. "We work at the club," I said.
"Oh, yeah?"
said the Colombian. Smooth inhale.
"Which?"
he breathed out. "The box," said James.
"The box,"
said the Colombian. Most people didn't know about it, but they wanted to know even if they didn't know it. "I work at the box," you say, and people ask, "What's the box?" Then you tell them, and they don't believe you. But one night there, and they change their minds about a lot. Suddenly, their husbands or their cousin or whatever they're into starts to seem a little bit vanilla. Or maybe that comes with a second visit. "We'll go," I said. "You'll like it."
"Okay,"
said the Colombian. And then we were inside of Alibi, drinking. The Colombian's name was Fabio. There were shots of tequila, introductions to the kid who we'd left on the street, to David Foster Wallace, to some guy you had to play if you wanted to use the pool table more. I don't remember names. Fabio knew them all. And pretty soon I was in the bathroom with Fabio and DFW, thanking each for saving me, saving the night. And then it was back into the heart of Alibi. James was racking up with the pool guy who had already lost 3 straight. Fabio started showing me wallets. He had several.
"This is what I do now," he said. "Me and my wife, but mostly me. They're custom."
The wallets were black and brown faux leather and had images printed on their face. One of the New York skyline with the Twin Towers still standing. One an American flag. One a digitally rendered sketch of a smiling 4-person family.
"No more funny stuff," Fabio said. "Done with it."
He flashed a proud grin. I never asked him what he used to do, but he did mention how he no longer carried a gun. "They're great," I said. As far as wallets go, they were bulky. Airsats, ready to fall apart.
"Yeah?"
he said. All he had left he put into those wallets. "I think so," I said.
"Good,"
he said, measured. He looked at me like I was a thing to be figured out.
"You would be good to work for me," he said. "I can see, I can tell. You're smart."
"I'm just quiet."
"You have a look,"
he said. "What look?"
"Your eyes. There's something." "Are you a cop?"
Fabio asked. "No," I said. "Why would I be a cop?"
"Okay,"
he said.
"Let's play next."
I nodded and then went out for a smoke. I was about to light up when a good Samaritan called out from the other side of the railing.
"You might want to flip that around,"
he said. "You saying I've been drinking too much?" I asked. It was so humid the cigarette felt soggy.
"Didn't say that,"
he said.
"Just saying you've been drinking."
There was some kind of scene unfolding. 2 cops were talking to a taxi driver who was leaning on his door. He was looking for 2 guys, 2 punks he called them, skipped on their fare. He'd driven them from the Upper East Side. $40, the taxi driver told the cops. $40. Like he had a sixth sense, Fabio came out of the Alibi immediately. He said,
"Leave him the fuck alone. Don't fucking touch him."
The cops looked at Fabio like he was paparazzi and continued to press the driver who was starting to look like he might be the guilty one.
"I'll pay the fucking fare,"
said Fabio. He pulled out a wad of bills from his pocket. The cops both had notepads out and were doing who knows what, amateur sketches.
"What's your name? What the fuck is your name?"
Fabio yelled at one of the cops.
"You know my name,"
said the cop.
"Say it,"
said Fabio.
"Officer Whitman,"
the cop said.
"White man,"
somebody yelled. The crowd tittered, amused, nervous. The whole show ended abruptly when the taxi driver, fed up and convinced he would not be receiving his fare, convinced the cops were stalling until he gave up his case or crime started happening, gave up. The cops addressed the audience of about a dozen by saying, "All right," got into the cruiser and drove off. And then Fabio was by my side, menthol burning. "That's the cop that came," said Fabio. He had that look in his eye. "I always see him, and I always make him say his name." He looked at me like he knew my deal. And I'm sure he did. He knew what I wanted. James, too. A life that held the potential for an event.
"You know, I didn't tell you the whole story," he said. "There's more."
He wanted me to ask, so I didn't speak.
"After I punched him, the Burning Man, Whitman didn't show for 10 minutes,
said Fabio.
"I sat with him. He thought he was going to die. He told me that he knew he was going to die, so he wanted to tell me a story from when he was a kid."
"After he called you the devil?" I said.
"What could he do? He thought he was dying. You take who you get. I was sitting with his head on my lap. I remember his neck. It was raw and stuck to my leg."
"When I was young,"
he said,
"it was different."
I don't know how he stayed awake. His eyes were barely open, but they were looking right into mine. He said something was wrong with his brain, but not when he was a kid.
"When I was a kid?"
he said. He kept saying that. I was thinking, here it is. Here's the thing right now in my hands, what everyone tries to ignore. I was thinking, I could kill this man. Maybe I should kill this man. Anyway,
Fabio said,
"when I was a kid,"
the guy said to me,
"my mom woke me up one morning. She said she needed cigarettes. She had to watch my brother. She was always watching my brother. She woke me up like the house was on fire. I remember being afraid. I was always afraid. Even then, my mom said it was okay. She just needed cigarettes. There's no need to cry. Why was I crying? She knew the man at the gas station. He'd sell me cigarettes if I just told him my mom sent me, the lady with the silver car and the limp."
He wouldn't close his eyes. He couldn't close his eyes. They were blistered and red. That's what I mean about having it all right there on my lap. He wouldn't close his eyes.
"So she gave me the money, and I went alone at 6 in the morning. And I got there, and there was a fire truck outside, and firemen, and one of the pumps was black and steaming. I just wanted to get cigarettes. I was going to walk into the store, get cigarettes, then go home. But I was looking at the firemen, and then the black gas pump, and I saw a person burnt right there. They had burned. They were frozen on the ground. It was like there was no way they had ever been alive, and I screamed so loud. The fireman came over and he said, 'Don't worry, son, it's nothing. It's okay, it's okay. It was just an accident. It happens. It was an accident.' And I ran back home. I wanted to make it be make-believe, like a dream. I wanted to tell my mom, and she'd tell me it never happened. It was a dream. I ran in the door and cried on her lap. She wanted to know about the cigarettes, and I told her the whole thing, the burnt woman. I thought she'd tell me what I wanted her to tell me. But then she got angry. She told me not to make up stories, and she slapped me on the back of the head. 'Where are my cigarettes?' she asked. And I gave her the money. I ran to my room, and I went out on the escape and up the roof, and I—"
Then he stopped talking. He was looking up at me, different than he had before, like he didn't trust me anymore.
"You don't believe me, do you?"
he said, like he might die if I told him that. So I told him I did. I did believe him.
"I mean, you said his brain was messed up, right?"
"I don't know,"
said Fabio.
"But he said when he got on the roof, he tried to look at the sun for as long as he could. That it hurt. He couldn't do it. He said that he was thinking about the devil on the roof. That if that can happen and no one believed it, the devil must be real. He started to speak to him. He said he knew one day he would meet the devil. He would die in the hands of the devil."
"Jesus," I said, "and he wound up with you?" Fabio smiled, a scared smile, a what-are-you-thinking smile.
That's what he said, I mean. And then Officer Whitman came with another guy. Guns drawn. They told me not to move. They looked at the guy and started cursing. They couldn't look at him. They called an ambulance and put me in the car. Whitman knocked the shit out of me. I don't know what for. I guess he thought I did it. He didn't really say, but he looked at me like that.
I tapped the ash off of my cigarette and didn't say a thing. He was an ugly man, Fabio. I could tell that he needed someone. You can always tell when a person needs another person. I might have hugged him if I thought he'd let me, if I thought he'd take it right. Instead, I said, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, well, he lived. He's fucked. Completely fucked, but he's alive.
I looked down the stairs to the alibi, hoping James might appear.
So the box,
said Fabio.
Are we going?
The box opens at 11, but no one comes in until 1. There are 3 20-minute shows each night, a rapid-fire rotation of burlesques. In between each show, everyone drank and snorted and shouted and danced to the deafening music spun by DJs who looked exactly like DJs. There was a mass shuffling of bodies through the cramped aisles. Walk-ins used the confusion to sneak past James and I, ushers, while we stood guard at the door of the theater and tried to work them for tips. We were given pills, fights erupted, the beefy tuxedoed security team closed in, neutralized, removed. Everyone made offhanded reference to the clubs conquered earlier in the night, countries flown in from earlier in the week, and occasionally offered vague recollections of previous trips to the box. We were by the bar. The bartender looked like James would look in about 20 years. Hawaiian shirt, long hair, resigned, comfortable.
What do you want? James asked.
Tequila, I said. Tequila? I asked Fabio. He was looking around like he was in heaven or hell, a place you'd heard of a million times that turns out to be nothing like you thought. Fabio, I said. It was the first time I said his name and it made me nervous.
What the fuck is this place?
He said. There was a person in 3-foot stilts and neon spandex navigating the doorway between the theater and the barroom. Holding their hand, someone cute, freckled, painted, wearing suit pants. Art school dropouts, I said. We squeezed through the crowd to the theater entrance, shook hands with the ushers, and made our way to the bench a few feet from the stage. The lights dimmed. It was 3:30, the third act. Ashley, the MC, slid from the red velvet curtain in a slim black cocktail dress. The crowd was already ready. They knew what was behind the curtain. Not exactly, but it was the third act. They knew. I watched Fabio's face, hoping to see some sort of fascination that every night flashed across the faces of the crowd. He scanned the room. He looked afraid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ashley shouted, we have a very special treat tonight.
She paused for a second.
It's been an honor and a privilege, she said, and swept an arm across the stage and the curtains parted.
There was organ music, long, dissonant notes that sounded like moans. An Iron Maiden at the back of the stage had a mannequin and a 3-piece suit inside, a long table with a few large candles caked in dribbled wax. There were bottles and bowls and a bucket, too. Flambeau had his back to the audience. No shirt, tight leather shorts, head shaved. His back was covered in tattoos. A dead raven, 2 fists, a depressed hare, the Eiffel Tower. He was moving the bottles around the table. He looked like a scientist. He dunked a sponge in the bucket and covered his body with liquid. Wet with sweat, it glistened even brighter. He turned around as the music stopped. His face was like, you have no clue what's coming. He plays with fire, I said.
I can see, said Fabio.
Flambeau pulled a thin metal pole from beneath the table and dipped the bob at the end in one of the bowls. He pulled a lighter from his pocket and lit it. He stared at the ball of fire for a moment with a caveman's curiosity. It was fascinating. He spit. A cloud of flame erupted from his mouth. The crowd gasped and then cheered. Mouth empty, he smiled. His teeth were small. You could see the gaps all the way from the balcony. Fabio moved forward. His legs pressed to the balcony railing.
Flambeau pulled another torch from under the table, dipped it in the bowl of fuel. He drew a quick line across the stage, lit it, and walked the line, feet bare. Fabio was holding his drink near his chest. I don't think he'd taken a sip. And then Flambeau shrieked, a deep, carnal shriek. He stared at us and paced the stage faster with each turn. I had an urge to pull Fabio from the balcony to put an arm around his waist and tell him Flambeau has a family, he's an okay guy, I drink with him, he tells me stories. The box never cut the music entirely, but tonight they did. It was nearly silent, indiscernible whispers. Flambeau continued to grin and pace. He approached the table, dipped the sponge, and covered his body in liquid. He dipped the torch in the bowl and lit it. He dashed the flame down his arm. His smile grew. Down his other arm. He jumped up and down. He slid the torch into his mouth and closed his lips over it. When he removed it, the flame was gone.
"More!"
yelled a voice. Flambeau paused. He looked through the room and then, I swear, at the balcony, at me. He held my gaze. We knew each other. I smiled. What else could I do? From behind, I watched Fabio, frozen. Flambeau took the sponge and rubbed his body, squeezed it on his shining head, took the torch, dipped it in the bowl, and ran the tip down his arms across his stomach. He lit the torch and screamed. Different than before. A child's scream, the high-pitched one. Not quite, but close to playful. He was holding the torch in the air. Fabio turned away from the stage and looked at me, into my eyes. What did they reflect? I have no clue, but whatever he found then was not what he'd seen at Alibi. It was more, I guess. Flambeau touched the torch to his stomach. Fabio launched his glass at me. My eyes closed as it found my cheek. I heard it and I felt it and probably tasted it as I opened my eyes, the tequila burning. Pain had barely started. It felt nuclear, new matter forming in my mouth. I opened it, blood dribbled out. I tongued at the spot, at my teeth. A piece came loose. I let it fall in the hand already catching the blood. Fabio hadn't moved. His eyes were closed. I saw past him to the stagehand rushing to Flambeau to cover him with a soaking towel as the flames petered out, all of this in seconds. The crowd turned on. Perfect Day started floating from the speakers as Flambeau was ushered stoic off stage. I wiped my hands on my shorts. "Fabio," I said. He was silent. His eyes were open, but he looked past me now to the stairs. "You broke my tooth," I said.
"You knew,"
he said, real low. "What?"
"You knew."
"I didn't know," I said.
"You did."
"He hasn't done that set in months."
"That I killed him."
"What?"
"That I killed him."
People were staring at me. I still feel their eyes. A metal taste mixed with the gush of nauseous saliva. Where the fuck was James? "What the fuck is going on?" I asked.
"He was on fire,"
he said.
"What was I supposed to do? It wasn't a salad bowl, it was a gun. Okay? I had to. You're a real piece of shit."
He took a wallet from his pocket, removed a few bills, and flung them at me. He slapped the wallet to my chest.
"How much more do you want?"
he said. He turned and walked calmly to the stairs and descended out of view. I thought of chasing him. I would tell him anything I could about the rottenness, about this summer, the box, the summer I decided to live. He thought I didn't understand, but I understood.
"I'm not evil. Either," I'd tell him. But watching him leave was already a memory. What can you possibly do with a memory? They come again and again and again. How I punched my dog in the ribs and the face, and he would cower, and I would cry, and I would whisper, "Sorry." The money I stole from my mom, the Xanax, the books. I never spoke to my dad. Every night at dinner, not a single word. I crashed both of their cars. Once it was snow, once I was drunk. All of this is true.
I weaved in and out between the bodies down the stairs, but Fabio was gone. I walked to the theater room and stood in the doorway. James, not far from the stage, reached across a booth, picking over some lamb chop lollipops left behind. I remembered again how hungry I was. We would stay for another hour. As the box emptied and the day began, we'd walk to the W on the corner of Prince and Broadway as the sun tinged the sky purple-pink. We'd wait. The train came to deliver us dreaming to our railroad apartment in Astoria. We'd always sleep through our stop. We'd always wake up at Ditmars where the train turns around. Mumble as we slide back to 30 Ave. What wakes us up? Always a little too late. I'll never know.
Hi, this is Sam Sheeran, and you just finished listening to my story, Alibi. For me, stories often come from a moment, from an image, from an experience, a little line of dialogue, a strange thing somebody said or did that kind of gets lodged in my head, I guess because of its strangeness, or shakes me out of my reality a little bit, sort of opens the world just a smidgen. And for this story, that moment came on a night out drinking with my best friend Dylan. We had gone to a bar called Alibi, and there we were regaled on the street with a story not so different from the story that Alibi here begins with, the one told by the Albanian, a.k.a. Fabio. And that story, there was something in me that doubted him, that was suspicious of his story. And the more I thought about it, the more I was upset with myself for doubting him or being suspicious of him. And that sort of turned into the story that you just listened to, me trying to figure out, you know, what the real story was behind Fabio's tale. And then figure out, you know, who is this person to this stand-in for me, this I narrator, who is this person to judge anyone? And when really... You know, what he wants is to be judged himself. And so I guess that's sort of the origin of the story. And I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening.
You've just heard Alibi by Sam Sheeran, read by J.R. Yanker. The Stories on Stage Davis podcast will be back in 2 weeks with a story by Elizabeth Rosner, who is the author of 3 novels, including Electric City, Blue Nude, and The Speed of Light. In the meantime, check us out on Facebook and find the full schedule of upcoming episodes at storiesonstagedavis.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks for listening.